All right, guys, this is episode 26, Adam Vina. This is the second half of our recording from when we sat down the previous episode, and we talked about Adam's horrific situation that he's going through and experiencing with his son. And, you know, it got pretty emotional. His situation really pulls on my heartstrings, and I kind of talk about that a little bit, and then things get kind of emotional. But either way, guys, I think that his story is something that should be a sign for all of us of what's wrong with the system that's going on. And when somebody says the government's not trying to intervene or interject on parental rights, we need to look at his situation, looking at it objectively, and really ask ourselves, do we agree with his situation? I think most of us would say we don't. I don't know. What do you think, Derek?
Yeah, his story is one of the most horrific stories I've heard about what's going on with, like, the CPS and the kids and the transgender stuff. He deserves all the support from everybody. But, yeah, I mean, this guy is just such a good guy. You can tell he's a great dad. He cares so much. And just what they're doing to him is just unbelievable. So, yeah, it was another good episode, a heart-wrenching episode. It was one of the harder ones to talk about. But the story needs to get out there far and wide, and he needs all the support from everybody. We all need to take a stand with him. I mean, this is the hill. You know, his story is a perfect example of, like, the hill you die on for this type of stuff. So, yeah, it was a great episode. Enjoy.
You ever wonder what is the truth?
There go those two guys again. Why do they care so much about the truth? I honestly think their questions for the truth are problematic. Don't we all?
All right, so here we are again. The next episode, we just jumped right into it. We're still with Seek and Adam. This go round, we're going to talk a little bit about Adam's situation, because I think it's crazy to see what you're dealing with, Adam. And I think it's a lot of parents' kind of worst nightmares. And I don't know. I'd like to talk about that, what's going on, and what you can talk about.
Because right. I'd imagine I'm pretty much an open book. I share pretty much everything. The only thing I don't share is, like, communications between me and my attorney, but everything else. If you follow me on Instagram, I share names, emails, that kind of stuff. Yeah. So I don't really care.
So for the listener that doesn't really know your story yet or understand the full context, why don't you just go ahead and jump into it and tell us what happened?
I'm going to try to squeeze about 3.5 to 4 years in a short summary. So my son Aiden is now 5 years old. It started at 2 is when I received the first text message from his mother showing me him in a pink dress. And I spoke out against it. Basically, the whole entire process that's been going on has just been words for me. I've been criminalized over words. So the first time she sent me the picture, I basically was angry, sent her a couple text messages saying that's my son, don't dress him in girls' clothes. That was the end of the conversation. And I thought that kind of resonated, and she got the point, like, okay, you know, I'm not going to dress him anymore. But on Aiden's third birthday, we were potty training Aiden at the time. He came up to me and said, Daddy, I got to go to the bathroom. I said, perfect, buddy. Do you want to go by yourself or do you need some help? He's like, no, I want to go by myself. I said, great. Let me know if you need help. So he goes to use the restroom. He comes out and he says, Dad, I need help with washing my hands. I washed his hands. And that's when he came up to me and said that mommy had bought him a pink princess dress. And the way I'm going to tell you guys and the way I told my son, I got down on one knee, looked him in the eye, said, hey, buddy, you're a boy and boys don't wear dresses. And he said, okay, Daddy. And we went back to cake and ice cream.
How old was he at this point?
He was 3 years old.
Okay.
3 years old at this point. Again, the time I did have my son, and I asked my father this all and my mom all the time, did I miss anything with Aiden? The short period of time that I was with him and I had custody of him, did he show any inkling that he wanted to be a girl. None. There was none, no, nothing. Anytime we would go to the toy store or we would go out, he would do the normal little boy things. So 2 days later, I was pissed. I personally think any father would be upset that the mother is dressing their son in girls' clothes.
Yeah, especially if it's something that was never like discussed or like,
no.
What are we?
Right. There was no inkling. I always say, I said it in court. You can't tell me that this little boy was a normal little boy, and then as soon as you took him away from me and took away my custody, he wanted to be a girl. There's no way. There's absolutely no way. So I sent out a group of text messages, and in none of those text messages was there any threats of violence. No text messages. I'm going to come over there and take him, or I'm going to come over there and beat you up. In those group of text messages, it was basically saying, he's a boy, not a girl. Stop dressing him in girls' clothes. And I sent that in a consecutive manner, right? Mm-hmm. She was able to retain a temporary restraining order on me for text messages. I've never hit this woman. I've never hit my son, never neglected my son. The only way that a parent can be removed from a child's life, or parents removed from a child's life, if there's physical abuse or neglect. That's the only way the state can remove a child from one parent or both parents. At not one time was there any neglect or physical abuse to my son or to her. Hmm. But they still, because of the temporary restraining order, and I now believe it's because I was not affirming the gender, is why they took my son away from me. And when I mean they took my son away from me, they took parental rights away from me. They took my father's rights away from me. They got to the point where I asked how doctor's appointments were going over a court-appointed app, and the previous attorney to her threatened a restraining order violation for communicating with her. I wasn't asking anything, just doctor's appointment and dental appointment, and they were threatening me with more legal action on a violation of the temporary restraining order.
Hmm.
So in court, that's when Judge Harvey Silverman from Pasadena is the one that this is where I'm getting actually very angry in court, because they're not listening to me. They're not. I had an attorney at the time that was very, I got to tread lightly here, but he never took my beliefs, or he never took what I was asking him to do into consideration. He was very, he believed that what the judge was doing and the attorneys were doing was right.
Mm-hmm.
I never wanted my son to go to a gender assessment at Children's Hospital. One, because he's too young. And why they're sending him to a adolescent youth gender clinic is beyond me. So they order the gender assessment to be done. They use this against me. I called Children's Hospital of Los Angeles to figure out what steps or how they determine of a kid this young if he's got gender dysphoria, which I'm learning more about every day, or he doesn't, right? The assessment was 90 minutes long. My son only spoke 5 minutes. The rest of the time was the mother speaking. I requested to be able to sit in on the assessment. Again, this is where everything was stripped away from me. I asked to be able to sit in on the assessment. I said, with something as great importance as gender is, the father should be involved. You should get the father's opinion. You should get the father's way of thinking on what's going on.
Yeah, how do they not pull you into that conversation if they're talking to the mom for most of the time? They should talk to the dad for the equal amount of time.
I agree with you 100%. And they denied me.
But the legal system didn't look at it like that at all.
No. They denied me to be able to sit on the assessment. So before the assessment, I went ahead. They denied me that. Then I hired a therapist. Not to sit in, again, I say it all the time, not to sit in a way left or right, but just to sit in and listen to see what they were doing, what questions they were going to ask my son. That was denied. Till this day, I have still not talked to Jonathan Juarez at Children's Hospital. They have completely X'd me out of that whole assessment. They will not give me
the reports.
Yeah, they will not give me the reports. My attorney has requested the assessment. Well, sorry, I have the first assessment. The first assessment states that my son has gender curious. And from what I understand, that is normal in kids.
Right. Well, especially when you're wearing dresses, you know, like these are obviously things that you're considering in your mind. If
let's put that into context too. So she has an older son who is autistic.
Yes. I always forget to talk about this. Thank you.
Yeah. So no sister. I grew up, there was three sisters and my baby brother, right? We have pictures of my brother in skirts and holding baby dolls. Mm-hmm. He had three older sisters. So, of course, he was curious. He's just playing with stuff that we're playing with.
Sure.
In Aiden's case, he just has a brother.
Yeah.
The mom had to go out of her way to go buy a dress to bring it into the household. It wasn't like there was a sister or a little girl around to grab a dress and put on Aiden.
Right.
So I just wanted to make that very clear as well. So even the gender curious assessment sounds suspicious to me because he has no way of being gender curious because he technically didn't have access to any of this stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
So.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I've always said, I got to regroup here. I always said, this has been forced upon my son. You know, this has 100% been forced on my son because he's never gave an inkling that he wanted to be a girl. Some of the stuff that I don't talk about is that when I got with my son's mother before Aiden was born, she has another son from a previous relationship. I took on that responsibility as my own. I also took on the responsibility of a special needs child. He has autism. So I took on somebody else's responsibility with special needs. I went to everything, school board meetings. I went to therapies to help him figure out how to treat the autism.
Right.
So those are things that people, they're not talking about, especially in some of the articles that have been published about me.
You stepped up to be a father figure and stepped in a difficult role, and a stepdad's hard enough as it is.
Right.
Dude. I mean, now you throw, other ailments and issues that you have to deal with, you know, course they leave that out.
Right. So the gender assessment, I was completely denied any access to the gender assessment.
So you said that they used it against you, that you called the hospital. So you were denied access to this stuff. They said you couldn't sit in there. So like any active parent, you called the hospital. Let me at least try to understand the process. And they used that against you?
Yeah, they said, go to the website and you can find out. I said, all right, I'll give you the first phone call I did. I said, okay, I'll go to the website and figure it out. There's nothing on their website that talks about the steps because, like I always say, when you go to the doctor if you're sick or if you got cancer, they have they take steps A, B, C, and D, and E, and so on to hopefully cure you. But with my son, they went from, oh, he wants to be a girl, to Z.
Yeah, right.
All the way to Z. They never treated it in the middle.
They never pulled you into the process to be involved.
Right, and I've said it in court. I said, if you would have sat me down, the father, and asked me what I think is going on with my son, you wouldn't have you wouldn't have the pissed off father that you have on your hands today. But because you have completely X'd me completely out of my son's life, that's why I'm pissed off at you guys.
You know, what I found kind of appalling, I read the article that they did on you in the LA Times, and it's so easy to demonize somebody that is going through the emotional process of not having the control in a custody battle. Like, you know, I told you earlier with my situation, dude, I totally get it. And I won custody and I broke down crying after that. It's impossible to not be emotional when you're as a dad, you're being stripped away. And then we're talking about in the context of a boy who has gender curiosity. That's what they call it, gender curiosity about being a woman. So who in their right minds thinks that the smart idea is to pull the male figure from the picture completely? Somebody who is just doing this with an agenda we need this transformation complete. So let's pull the person that's the biggest blockade.
Right.
And it's like, what dad wouldn't do? Everything that you've done, dude, and everything I read, what dad wouldn't be in your position?
They're lucky that all he is pissed off.
Yeah, right.
Let me just say that.
Right.
Yeah, and again, I've used is words. Yeah. I mean, I might not have used the most nicest words.
Who does when you're frustrated?
I know. Mm-hmm. I know. I've never threatened anybody's life. I've never threatened, I'm going to come down there and beat your ass. Nothing like that. It's always been, don't do this to my son. Yeah. Don't do this to my son, and give me, I need my voice to be heard. And that's why I went to social media. I was desperate when it came to my son. Yeah.
So talk about your first, you know, that's how we discover you. So, you know, talk about your first, the video that you did.
So I started, people were like, oh, you know, Adam, I think you need to go to counseling and you need to see a therapist. And I'm just, talking with those people is not me. I don't trust them. And two, I'm a normal blue collar father, man, that I've never was raised to share my feelings. But I really needed to keep some type of connection with my son. So that's why I started making the videos. I started making good morning videos to my son. In the cab of my truck, I would just say, hey, good morning, buddy. It's dad. You know, it's Monday. This is what I've got going on. I know, mom, I know you got school. Hopefully, you know, and I've never spoken bad about my son's mother. In none of my videos have I ever belittled my son's mother. But I would just make videos. And that was my way of keeping a connection with my son, still basically trying to feel like a father. And even till this day, yes, I'm fighting for my son, but they've completely ruined me, and I don't feel like a dad. You know, mm-hmm. I don't feel, I've missed so many things with my son.
So the video that he's talking about of talking to his son, it's so heart-wrenching, and it's such an emotional, like, pulling of your heartstrings, right? And so the way I came into this was my friend Lindsey Graham, which most people know as Patriot Barbie. She and I are really good friends. She's part of our Mom Army Coalition. And somebody made a comment on...
I wrote Gays Against Groomers.
That's what
I was desperate. And so it must have been right when Gays Against Groomers first started up. Mm-hmm. Somebody recommended this group, so I wrote them in their DMs a paragraph.
But you also comment or something in a post, yes. And then some follower saw his comment, went to his profile, saw the video, sent that video to Patriot Barbie. She discovered it. She goes online and starts doing a whole post about it. And I'll let you share the details of that. She tagged us. She tagged Mom Army. And then I saw it. And then tell them how you discovered her posting the video.
So I was sitting in court. So I was sitting in court, pacing back and forth, waiting for the thing, and I'm on my phone, and I've maybe posted one picture of my son when I did have him. I didn't feel that, you know, I wanted to post them all over the internet, you know. But someone, now that I know it was Patriot Barbie Lindsey Graham, someone posted a bunch of pictures of my son, and I'm like, who the hell is posting pictures of my son? Like, I was starting to get upset, and then she came on, and...
She was emotional on that video.
And it wrecked me in court. It absolutely wrecked me. I was crying in court because of what she was saying. I showed my pop. My pop's does not cry. I showed him, and he started crying in court.
Yeah.
And I
cried when I watched the video. So to summarize, Lindsey was basically recounting that a follower sent her the video of his, sent the profile, saw she was watching the videos of him talking to his son, telling his son how much he loves him and all of that. And she started crying on this video. Then, you know, we're friends, so I'm watching the video, and then I'm texting her, Lindsey, oh my God, we got to help this dad. What do? We got to help this dad. And the usual thing that I do, I'm a connector, you know, and I work with so many people across the country. So I'm texting her. I'm texting Jamie from Gays Against Groomers. I'm texting Aaron Friday from Our Duty. I'm like, we got to help this dad. Can we get on a Zoom? So couple days later, I put together a Zoom call. Adam's on it. Jamie from Gays Against Groomer, Aaron from Our Duty, Lindsey Graham, you know, Patriot Barbie. A few of us got together and we let Adam talk. Tell us what happened. Tell us your story. And I mean, it was so emotional. And that was the moment I was like, I don't care, but we're going to figure out how to help this dad. and we've been friends since, and we've been on quite a crazy journey, you know, with everything that's been happening to him. And my goal was to get his story out there. I wanted more people to know what was going on. And so we really worked together, and he started getting on some radio shows and some podcasts and news OAN, and, you know, different people Newsmax. Reaching out, Newsmax and stuff. And his story started to really get out there. And that's kind of how we're here.
Yeah. And I tell a lot of people, you know, yeah, I've made some mistakes in this whole situation, but the mistakes that I have made do not warrant the punishment that I have received. I did not deserve to be arrested. I was arrested because I didn't want my Harvey Silver, I was only allowed 2 FaceTime conversations with my son a week. 2 10-minute conversations.
They put a limit on it?
Yeah.
A time limit on
it? Yeah. So I was only allowed 10 minutes, 20 minutes a week with my son. I was not allowed, I could not talk about what he was wearing. If I talked about what he was wearing, it was a violation of court orders. So I could not. So I physically had to sit there on the phone, talk with my son. He's got earrings in his ear. He's got nail polish on. He's got a treasure box full of girl stuff. I can't say anything male to him. I can't talk about men stuff with him because it would be a violation of the restraining order. But one day it was school time. He said, oh yeah, we went shopping for clothes. I said, oh great, what kind of clothes you got? Oh, he would say my dresses are in the washing machine. And then he said, oh, mom bought me rainbow shoes. And I was like, well, and then I didn't even talk to him. I talked directly to her. I said, why the hell are you buying my son rainbow shoes? Right? That comment got me kicked off. She ended the phone conversation, right? Which was in like seven minutes into the phone
conversation. When you were talking to your son, she's right there, like on a...
She's off to the side.
Oh, but you know she's there.
The court states that she had to monitor each phone conversation.
Oh, my. So you... Okay. This is...
You know the court system, and this is crazy.
Yeah, this is... Yeah. I'm sorry. Please, keep going.
So she had to monitor the phone conversation. So she cut the conversation off when I was getting upset about him being in rainbow shoes.
Of course she would.
I text her through the OFW app, don't cut my time off short, and then I tried to re-engage the phone conversation, right? The FaceTime conversation. She didn't pick up, so I left it at that. The next morning, I woke up, got ready for work, left my house at 4:30 in the morning, was going to go to a Starbucks to get something to drink, but it was a holiday, so I believe they were closed. So I flipped a bitch on my street, drove down the street, and I got lit up by the police department. I'm like, oh, they're probably pulling me over for an illegal U-turn. Come to find out, it was Pasadena Police Department.
And how many officers? he's leaving that detail out.
Yeah, there was 15 police officers in total.
For this guy.
15 police officers in total. So...
I know, you're just like, it's so like, unbelievable, right?
At that point, you got to be like, everybody free.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Just the like, I felt like, what you know, are you doing?
I felt like El Chapo.
He's being punked.
I felt like I was El Chapo. They sent everybody after me. You know, I was El Chapo or, you know, the Colombian dude, Pablo Escobar. That's how many police officers they had out for me. I've never been arrested a day in my life. I have no criminal history. I'm a clean slate. But they sent 15 police officers after me. So at the time, they pulled me out of the car. I was detained for 5 hours. Detained for 5 hours before I knew what they were going to do. They were there because of the restraining order violation. They were there to perform a search warrant on my house for my firearms.
So because you violated the restraining order, you now no longer are able to have firearms? Is that right?
Correct.
That's the way it works?
They're treating me as a felon. Okay. So they have, besides them taking away my son, besides them taking away my parental rights, my father's rights, they have completely stripped me of my Second Amendment.
But it's also like it's almost like it's a narrative building process, mm-hmm. is what it seems
yes.
like. They're He's trying dangerous. To build a narrative on you.
Gotta take the guns away
from him. You've done nothing wrong.
Yeah, because you mentioned rainbow shoes on a FaceTime call.
Yes.
Yeah.
Isn't that wild?
Yeah. So at the time, I'm dealing with the custody vet, I'm dealing with the court system, and I'm dealing with a new position at my job, right? So I'm beyond stressed. So when the first restraining order, the TRO got implemented, you have to turn in all your guns. So I turned in 95% of my collection that I had, right? I had forgotten about my 30-06 and my 22. Not because it was me wanting to stick it to the man like, oh, you can't touch me. It was just I had completely forgotten about these two firearms. So they perform a search warrant on my house. I've got 15 police officers in front of my house. They completely tore my house apart. My bedroom, they tore everything apart. They violated the whole, at the time, I was living with my parents. Because I could not afford to pay with legal fees and everything like that. I could not afford to live on my own anymore. Right?
Yeah.
So they completely woke my parents up at 4:30 in the morning, pulled them out of their beds, not physically pulled them out of their beds, but they had to get out of their bed. They had to stand outside the house, right, as they performed a search warrant on my house.
So real quick, so the temporary restraining order gets implemented. At that point, you know that you have to turn in your firearms. You
Correct.
Turn in your firearms except for two that
Right.
you had somewhere else and Correct. Didn't even really think about.
I,
so then you violate the restraining order, and the next morning, now they're pulling you over and saying, hey, buddy, you forgot about two firearms.
No, I didn't. That's the funny thing about it.
I
didn't
so,
even.
So,
I didn't
so they
even.
Just are doing a search warrant just to make sure.
Correct. Correct. They wouldn't. To be honest with you, they had no idea if they were going to arrest me or if they were going to let me go.
And you said you were detained for 5 hours.
I was
just in the back of the car?
They were going to keep me in the back of the car, but I said, I want to get out of the car.
Uh-huh.
So they let me out of the car.
Did they have you handcuffed?
I was handcuffed for 5 hours.
Behind or in front?
Behind.
What are we doing?
So I was outside as they performed the search warrant. Finally, they performed the search warrant, right? They got into my gun safe, right? So they took that stuff. They took I'm trying not to get off topic of my son, but but they in the restraining order it doesn't say it only says firearms, right? So technically they were only allowed to take the 22 and the 30-06, but what they took was two uppers. I had turned in the lowers because in California the lower is considered the firearm,
for sure.
The upper is not.
Yeah.
So they took two uppers from me. They took a barrel, which is not a firearm.
Right.
They took a slide. They took my two firearms. They took a scope. They took a red dot. And they took a couple other things.
So just any sort of firearm.
Correct.
Adjacent.
Everything that they could find firearm-wise, they took.
Correct. They took it. And as they're walking out, I said, what are you taking those uppers for? They're firearms. I'm all, no, they're not. I said, by California state law, those uppers are not considered the firearm.
It's
the
not,
lower.
Yeah, the lower is.
The funny thing about
the trigger mechanism.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. They do. The police department do not know anything about firearms.
That's actually really scary.
Yeah.
Zero. I even talked to the detective that made the arrest, and I said, dude, you know you took stuff that you weren't supposed to take. He's all, oh, I don't know anything about firearms. I'm more into cars. And I said, detective, you're a police officer. Shouldn't you know about firearms? And he had no comment for me. Zero comment for me.
This is new information.
This is crazy.
I'm giggling.
No,
this
no.
part of the story you
yeah.
didn't tell me.
It's okay. All right. All right.
So
when did this happen? When did this time frame wise?
This was August 12th, 2022.
So this, like, okay, how long was the restraining order in place
so
before
been,
this happened, I guess is a better...
I was, in total for the TRO, the temporary restraining
yeah.
order, I was on for almost 3 years.
Okay, okay.
So now they have granted, we're going a little bit ahead,
yeah,
but
yeah,
now
yeah,
they
no,
have granted a 5-year restraining order. So
permanent.
This is a permanent 5-year
yeah,
restraining
five
order.
5-year permanent restraining order. So technically, if you look at it, technically, it's going to be an 8-year restraining order for
overall.
Overall, for no domestic violence, no physical
arrest.
Abuse, no nothing like that. They have granted an 8-year restraining order for words. For words of me not wanting my son to be
yeah.
a girl.
Yeah.
It seems like that California wants to make an example yep. out of you, is what it seems like. As a parent,
there's no other way
well,
to look at it.
Right.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you go even deeper into my case, my first judge was an attorney in West Hollywood, and he represented the LGBTQ community. Okay. He is strongly for this gender assessment, this gender affirming care, everything like that. So I got to be careful, but I wanted a new judge. As soon as I found out this information, this was even before the podcast I did about him.
Yeah.
I wanted a new judge. My attorney told me that I was not allowed to have a new judge. When in all actuality, I could have filed a 170.6 gave details on why I believe this judge is biased, and I could have received a new judge, but I had been told from all the attorneys, everyone that was involved, that I'm not allowed to ask for a new
you
judge.
You have new counsel shit now?
I do have new counsel now. Okay. Yeah. So, but I was not allowed to, they told me I was not allowed to ask for a new judge. Yeah. And I knew that this judge was going to be very biased and very one-sided. And again, this whole case has been one-sided. The court system has never asked me what I think is going on with my son. The Children's Hospital has never sat me down and asked me what I think is going on with my son. This private school that I had him in, it took me a year to get. I was paying for private school for him, and I requested weekly progress reports. It took a year for them to start giving me progress reports. A year. And it's been very one-sided this whole entire time. I have never... Wait. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, you know, just going into his case and stuff, what we were finding out in some of the research is who's behind.
Yeah, I was going to get to that. Yeah,
on the other side. And yeah, so the lawyer is hired by a nonprofit organization called the Genesee Center. The Genesee Center is a longstanding domestic violence organization started by 5 Black women here in Los Angeles. And so the people, the sinister people behind... It's a lot more than just his case. It's like, like you said, it's like he's being made as an example. His son's mom doesn't work, so
she works now.
She works now. Okay, so at the time she wasn't.
But she doesn't have a normal job.
Okay.
I just found all this out. But got go it. Ahead.
But the fact that she has this representation.
I'm her employer.
The fact that she has representation from this, you know, this legal group from this nonprofit is representing domestic violence victims. She was the one who committed domestic violence against him.
Yeah.
But she's being represented by a domestic violence organization.
Of course. I had her arrested for domestic violence. Uh-huh. Yeah. But they swept that under the rug. And that goes to the point that I was talking about you earlier, that they're not sticking there. There's no money to be made with the safe parent. There's no money to be made with the safe parent because no one's making money. Everything is going to be honky-dory if the safe parent has the child. They only make money with the unsafe parent. Again, this is my own opinion. This is not anybody else's opinion. This is the way I'm looking at it, is that if they keep it with the unsafe parent, it's going to be a revolving door for years and years and years. They're going to get continuing, and they're going to continue therapists, doctors. Don't get me started on the minors council that I had. Minors counsel the attorneys could not even negotiate Christmas gifts for my son. I am still, to this day, have Christmas gifts from 3 years ago. I did a video of me physically having to open my son's Christmas gifts and explain to my son through a video of what he got for Christmas. Wow. So the most simplest thing that these attorneys could have done was, all right, you know, we're going to have the grandparents. Again, that's another thing. We'll have the grandparents spend 2 hours. They're not on the restraining order. They have done nothing to this child. We're going to allow the grandparents to have two hours with their grandson and open up Christmas gifts. They couldn't even negotiate Christmas gifts. Their reasoning was, oh, we're afraid Adam is going to put a note in the Christmas gifts. And my argument was, I said, my son is 2 years old or 3 years old at the time. The dude can't even read. But I'm going to put why would I put a note in my son's Christmas gifts? So I'm still sitting on Christmas gifts. They couldn't negotiate Christmas gifts. Then we finally come to the decision. All right, we're going to give Adam visitations. Great. I want some type of male figure to be in my son's life. Right. So I said, I told minors counsel, what steps do I need to take to get my son back in my life? All right. Well, the stipulations are, you're going to have supervised visitations, and you can't talk about his attire, and you can't talk about male stuff.
Is this
during everything.
Oh, okay, I see. So this is before the permanent restraining order was established. You were asking, hey, just a temporary restraining order, how can I be in my son's life?
Correct.
And they said, so supervised visitation.
Supervised visitations, could not talk about attire, and there was one other thing that I could not talk about.
And is this after the search warrant situation?
This is after the search warrant.
Okay.
Again, there's another story the story is out of control.
No,
so,
it's cool. I just want to, and for the listeners, so we can kind of just understand the sequence of it.
Absolutely. Yeah. So it took me about a month to talk with my parents and talk to other people about because my argument was I had done nothing to deserve supervised visitations. I don't need a supervisor to teach me how to be a father.
You're
I don't
not
need,
a criminal.
Yeah. So about a month later, I'll agree to the supervised visitations. I'll agree to your roadblocks that you're putting in front of me. What do I need to do? Do I need to contact my own personal supervised visitation? How much does it cost? I would prefer a male supervisor, everything like that. They're like, Adam, we've got people lined up for you. We're going to get you in contact. It's going to cost this amount of money a month or this amount of money a week. I said, great, let's get the ball rolling on this. Every time I agreed to one of their stipulations, they threw another roadblock in front of me and another roadblock in front of me. 6 months later, they could not negotiate visitations, only for me to receive an email stating that, sorry, Adam, but we had dropped the ball on visitations. So they never wanted me. That's why they continue to roadblock me. That's why they continue to do stuff to me, because they never wanted me to be back in my son's life.
Right.
Yeah, that's... this is wild, right? Because it's almost like every dad needs to hear your story, and every dad needs to understand like what's at stake here. And to be honest, I don't know I guess a question would be like, is this something that made sense to you? Like when you heard that your son was kind of, your wife was kind of putting dress on your son, was it something that you were like, oh, of course she would do that?
No.
Or is it something that you're like, whoa, what do we like, she was never like more liberal or anything?
I mean,
like
she
that?
Was, yes, she was liberal, but I didn't think she would take it to the extreme that she has taken
it
to.
I see, yeah.
I think some of it has to do is getting back at me, because she knew this would be something that I could not accept. I would have problems with it, and because she wanted complete and total control.
Of course.
She did not want to give up control, because she always told me that if my parents watched Aiden or if somebody else watched the boys, that she felt less of a mother because she was asking for help. And I would always tell her, no, you're a great mom, but I think you need to separate yourself for a day. You and I go out or something like that, and just be an adult. Without the kids around, being an adult, you and I go out, have drinks, go out and have dinner. But she did not, she felt less of a mother if she would relinquish the control to somebody else. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was the court ordered, before I lost complete custody of Aiden, the court ordered Wednesdays to go to my parents' house for my visitations. Even though I was not going to be there, I was at work, it would still give time to the grandparents.
Yeah.
And it was like pulling teeth to be able to get her to drop him off at the grandparents' house.
Now, there's a restraining order currently of
yes.
you. Do your grandparents
nope.
have any sort
nope.
of... I don't know. Okay, so family court, they always pitch it like, hey, we act in
the
best interest of the child and the family unit.
Right.
That's how they always spin it. And it seems like for this case it there's almost like a caveat to it, like, unless there's gender affirming mm-hmm. issues, then we're gonna go with the gender affirming parent,
right? And they used that against my father, because I was on the phone with opposing counsel, because opposing counsel, when she got the new attorney, that's when it really started to steamroll out of control. In court, she would refer to my son as my daughter. She would refer to my son with she/her pronouns, and they would refer to my son with a girl's name in court, and I was very persistent. Do not have a little respect for me, and don't do that. And they would not do that.
I don't it, like you would think that the like I feel like as a judge, right? It's very clear. Hey, there's this. The dad wants to say boy. The mom wants to say daughter. Let's just say child, so we can get through the process. You know, like
right.
like you figured there would be some sort of better way to mitigate these issues, but instead it's like they knew it'd make you spiral, and then they used the spiral against mm-hmm. you to mm-hmm. make you seem like this Christ. Unfit father. And the person who's really losing in all this is your child.
Yes,
because your
absolutely.
Son is losing a dad, and everybody's already affirmed the fact that he's struggling with his gender.
Right.
So the most important person that you have to have both parents on board.
This is a 3-year-old.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
3.
And even the nurses, when I would call Children's Hospital, they would be like, how old is your son? Oh, he's 4. Well, why is he here? This is an adolescent youth center. And I'm all, well, I was like, fuck, you tell me. Excuse my language. Yeah, I was like, you tell me why he's there.
Well, then the other egregious thing, too, is, I'm, you know, we're going to get into it, and it's his parents don't have any rights to seeing Aiden either.
Yeah, that's
so
seems,
how do you punish
as well.
The grandparents as well, yeah. You know? And in context, you know, we learn about this, but Charles Manson, while he was sitting in jail, had custody of his children. His children could come visit him in jail. I mean, that's the lunacy of Adam's case. It's so extreme and so egregious. Mm-hmm. Nothing makes sense. No. And then, you like you said just a few minutes ago, unless it's the gender
affirming stuff. Yeah.
All of a sudden, it's like all the rights go to the gender affirming caring and take all. And so, yes, this is happening to a lot of dads, but guess what? It's happening to moms too. So the moms that are not affirming, mm-hmm. they're losing custody to the dads that are affirming.
Wow. Yeah.
That's happening too.
Wow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, we saw another situation where the school affirmed the child without the parents' notification. There was that lawsuit that happened and that it's just, it's interesting to see what's going on, because this is another dynamic that now parents have to contend with. Yeah. Is like, and that's one thing that my wife and I are very good at, is we're in lockstep with ideologies. Mm-hmm. And if we're not, like, we need to talk about it, you know? And I tell young people all the time, like, hey, man, be careful, because it's different
now.
Your
values,
you know? Yeah. Make sure that these women that you're laying down with and stuff, they match your values, because... You know,
it can get ugly.
It can get ugly, yes, and then you will be taken out to the streets and stoned. You know, mm-hmm. metaphorically, yeah. You know, you're gonna be hung from the rafters and made an example of. And man, okay, so talk to me about this, Adam. What are some things that you're hopeful about, right? Like, I know you got the 5-year restraining, or is there a way that we can push back on this? Like, what is the plan to approach this or deal with this with where we are?
So right now we're in the middle of the appeals process. So the appeals process can take up to two years to be heard. And we could go into court and they could read it and they could still continue the restraining order for the full amount of time. Or they could look at it, because my attorney's very, very smart. In court, this is how biased everything is against me and my attorney. They spent 45 minutes on the gender assessment, right? Talking about it, opposing counsel. My attorney stood up to basically debunk or speak out against it. And my second judge said to my attorney, oh, we're not here for a gender debate. My attorney comes back and, right? My attorney says, well, wait a second. You just allowed these two people to speak for 45 minutes about the gender assessment, and you're not going to give me at least 5 minutes to rebut it. Thank you, Seek. And he said, no, we're not here for a gender debate. So both of my judges, I did a podcast about my first judge being on the AFCC, which is a family court judge association, right? There's a lot of conspiracies that go against the AFCC. And within 24 hours after I dropped that podcast, my first judge, Harvey Silverman, recused himself, right? We still did not know.
He was being exposed. I mean, Adam was exposing some of the connections and the dots behind the scenes.
Yes. Uh-huh. So he recused himself, and all the attorneys that my attorney have talked to are baffled by this, because no judge recuses himself after 3 years of being involved in a case. Mm-hmm. So, and he was on the board of directors of the AFCC. The second judge that I have over at Stanley Moss Courthouse, he was the president of the AFCC back in 2022. We tried to file a 170.6 to remove the judge. He denied it. We filed the second one. So you've got a very small window to file that paperwork. And we filed it in the time that we were allowed to. He refused the first one and refused the second one, and he was on he was the president of the AFCC. Mm-hmm. So we're up against a real.
I mean, we could do a whole episode on trying to expose the people behind this particular case. It really is a rabbit hole to go down.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. And you know, and I think, you know, to your point on where do we go from here and some solutions, you know, obviously there's a Give, Send, Go to help Adam with his legal funds. So if anybody wants to support his case, by all means, whatever you can chip in. I mean, it gets very expensive, obviously, to fight this. And we want him in, to continue in this fight. And he's being so brave and so bold to speak out, you know, so candidly about this, that he's being targeted, you know. And I mean, I worry a lot of times, you know, with what we're doing. But the next step is to really think about the timeline, right? He's five. In the state of California, it's become a sanctuary state for trans. Yep, there are cases of, Jeff Younger's a great case in Texas where his ex has fled Texas to come to California so they can be protected under the trans bills here in California. so we have a timeline. I mean, a young boy can be put on puberty blockers around 9 years old. Yep. So we've got 4 years to try and make sure Aiden doesn't, they don't put him on that path.
Yeah.
Which he's on that path.
He's on that path.
Right now.
They're regularly visiting this gender clinic at Children's Hospital. He's getting alerts about that through his insurance company.
Yeah.
They won't tell him what they're doing, mm-hmm. but he's getting notified that she's visiting, you know, the gender clinic. So we're working on it from the legislative side and litigation side, right? Yeah. That's the biggest areas where we can affect some change. 26 states have already passed bills to ban gender affirmative care in mm-hmm. the country. So that's half, like a little more than half of the states. A lot of them are going through challenges right now. Appeal, you know, ACLU is suing. And that happened in Tennessee. Tennessee was one of the first states to pass this bill. The appeals courts put a stay on it and says, yes, this bill is valid. They can ban gender affirmative care for minors. We are going to work on it from the federal level. We want to push for a federal ban. Marjorie Taylor Greene introduced a bill back in August of 2022. I think it was like H.R. 8731. Don't quote me on the bill, but she introduced it. But I think it was before its time. August of 2022, we had just started Mom Army. We hadn't even done our first rally against gender affirmative care. It wasn't until October 2022 we worked with...
It was H.R. That Marjorie Taylor Greene bill was H.R. 8731.
31, okay. And so it wasn't until October where I, Mom Army, and we worked with Aaron Friday from Our Duty, and we did a rally in Anaheim against the American Academy of Pediatrics. It was called the First Do No Harm Rally. And that was one of the first rallies of its kind. And that was October of 2022. So just to put in context, Marjorie Taylor Greene introduced this bill a few months before that. And so it never went anywhere. I'm going to be in D.C. next week for the targeting of parents. We talked about it in the last podcast mm-hmm. episode, is to bring attention and get an investigation going on all of the parents who are being targeted for speaking up. I mean, you guys have examples here in Temecula, right, mm-hmm. of parents who are being targeted for speaking up. So we also want to address banning gender affirmative care for minors at the federal level. When we talk about how do we go on offense, right, instead of always reacting and being on defense, we need to approach this from every angle. Mm-hmm. You know, so all the different groups, every fight is at the local level, state level, federal level. We need to do all of it. So
solution-based goals, right? Yeah. Like just how do we deal with it? How do we fix it?
Yeah, and whether or not, you know, and obviously if there's, you know, if Biden is elected or whatever, a Democrat, they're gonna veto this bill, right? But we still need to get the conversation out into the national discourse, so that people can understand what's actually happening. Because to me, aside from COVID, this is the biggest medical scandal, you know, of experimental mm-hmm. medical things that are being done to children of all people. You know what I mean? And we need to have a stand firm. And, you know, going back to talking about the Civil War and, you know, taking a stance against slavery and all of that, that is our time right now. Our time is to stand very firm against the mutilation of children. And I'm going to say it as it is. It's not gender affirmative care. That's freaking putting a bow on it, you know? That's that's not even truthful language. What is happening is children are being sterilized, children are being mutilated, you know, I mean, it's affecting their future ability to have a family, and no one's talking about that. I mean, we are talking about that, obviously, right? So that's some of the solutions we're looking at, is like, we need people to understand, like, what is happening, and Adam is, like, case number one. And if you want to talk about bills, you know, we've been fighting a lot of the bills up in Sacramento, trying to block them. Yeah. Unfortunately, there's hardly any bills to support in California. We're mostly opposing bills. But we were up there. Adam spoke at a press conference opposing AB 957. Yeah, AB 957 was supposed to be taking custody away from parents who didn't affirm the gender and all the stuff, right? And everyone kind of did this rah-rah cheer because, you know, the bill passed and then Newsom vetoed it, right? So everyone's like, oh my God, this is a win. I'm like, wait a minute, guys. Of course he vetoed it. You know why? He doesn't have to have a bill. Adam's a clear case that you could do this without having a bill.
Without having the bill.
So we need to be very careful about what we celebrate, because they just give us little crumbs, right? Newsom threw a little crumb at us. It was like, they will shut him up. I'm going to veto this. I'm going to look like a hero. No, it was all a PR stunt. Mm-hmm. He knows darn well he didn't have to sign that bill into law, because Adam's a perfect case of it happening.
Yeah, because he's just giving it to the family court judges at their discretion.
Yeah.
You know, at their discretion.
Yep. So we need to really understand what we are facing and the battle that we're in, and really attack this from every angle. I want...
And he signed even worse laws than AB 957.
Yeah.
Worse laws than AB 957.
I just want us in a place where this fight's going to be over. Look, the tides are going to turn because the evidence is there, right? In the UK, they've already banned puberty blockers for children, right? There are leaks from WPATH on all the egregious things that they know is happening, and they're just trying to hide it. So the house of cards is falling. This is going to turn around. It's just not happening fast enough for us and our side. So we keep fighting until this thing ends.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so we have to be on offense and attack this from every angle. So our goal as an organization is to keep getting Adam's story out there, to keep building the coalition. We're finding other parents who are dealing with the same issue. And then we're being strategic. You know, we're all having a meeting, you know, after this, is to all figure out how to collaborate and work together, and how do we strategize to be effective in amplifying all of our voices in this fight, you know. So my hope is that this is going to end, and it will, because like I said, the evidence is there, you know, but the carnage that it's going to leave behind, we're already seeing it. You know, we're seeing detransitioners who can't get medical care for detransitioning because there's not even a medical code for detransitioners. So in Arizona, we're working on a bill to identify that and to bring resources, medical resources for detransitioners. So Chloe Cole has been testifying there, and we hope that bill will start to seep across the nation as well, because we can't ignore these children who are being devastated by this system that is making so much money off of them and ruining their life.
You know,
it's crazy, and you know, we're probably getting close to that time, but I want to say to you, Adam, and I'm going to try to not get emotional, you know. When I was going through my custody battle, I always thought, at the end of the day, I'll spend whatever I have to, I'll risk and sacrifice everything. I want to look at my son in the eyes, and I want him to know I did everything. I did everything for you. And that's what you're doing, man. And
I don't feel like it, but
I know. But here's the thing: is time. You can't stop time, you know. And no matter whatever they do to you, whenever a piece, I'm a big chess guy. Whenever a piece on the board gets moved, changes the whole dynamic of the game, and there's a lot of things at play here. And for the sake of the system and everything that's going on, your son is going to grow into who he's meant to be and intended to be. And there's going to come a time when he's going to hear all these stories. He's going to look back on the videos you did. He's going to listen to the podcast you did. He's going to understand how hard you stood firm on your conviction as a man. Whether you recognize it or not, you are being the example of a man and that father figure. And one day he's going to tune into that message, and it's going to change everything. And you're going to be able to make all of those people who made these decisions or were complicit in this atrocity that's happening to you, they're going to pay for this. Their time will come. But you know, have faith, man. You know, I know you said you're a religious guy, you know, and we said, I'm not that religious. Whatever it, I tell people this all the time, like, whether you believe in God or energies or just trust in the system, go with the flow, whatever that is, that the energy that exists that makes things happen. You just have to keep fighting for it. I believe in manifestation of what you want, man. And I know right now it's really hard. I've sat on couches, you know, like crying, you know, thinking I'm gonna lose my son. So I hear your story, and it just, it's hard for me, man. And I'm with you, brother, and I'm sorry you're going through this, but however we can help, I think just getting your message out there is huge. And you know, I'm gonna keep following your story, and however we can help you guys
we're not giving up on Aiden, and I look forward to the day that Aiden gets to run into his arms and they can be together again, because that's the end goal of all of this, is we want Aiden to be healthy and safe and loved.
Yeah.
So I always tell Adam all the time, we've become really good friends over all of this, and it's sad how we got together and how we became friends. You know, it's unfortunate the circumstances that brought us together, but I try to remind him in the toughest moments that Aiden will know that he fought like
100%
hell to protect him.
And then, like, that's, you know, like we worry about all of these things when our kids are children, you know, and as they get older, we don't realize like the times that we're worried about is a fraction of their life and the impact that we could have. And when you get through this and your son gets through this, there's going to come a aha moment. Mm-hmm. Oh man, this is what really was going on. Mm-hmm. And brother, I just hope you stay strong and stay confident. And I know it's hard and it's easy to just give up. You know, so many people have fatherless homes.
Right.
And we talk about how destructive that is to young children. And here, time and time again, we see these fathers who want to be active and who actually care. And it's like, dude, like you don't have the control or the right to rip my family from my arms. Nobody does. Mm-hmm. You know, and I know it's hard to just stay sane in a world where all this craziness is going on, brother. Yep. But I'm with you, man.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah.
So if you'd like to give to the Legal Fund, it's givesendgo.com/save Adam's son. So save Adam's son is the /.
Okay.
And then we can give it to you. I was looking for a pen to write it,
but no, we'll talk about it. Okay.
Yeah, no, just thank you for sharing your story. And
thank you for having me on. I think you were saying,
the truth always comes, truth is truth. And what you're doing, like, you're doing what's right is right. You know, like you said, Aiden and stuff, like, things will work out. And just it's so funny to think about, like, yeah, we're just asking men and stuff in the community just show up to a school board meeting. Right. They're like, oh, it's so hard while you're here fighting full-time job, fighting the system, fighting Newsom, fighting the, you know what I mean? And still doing what's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, the financial burden, and, you know, so there's just no excuse for people not to get involved. And we're all with you, and your story's getting out there. And I know you have a huge amount of support around.
I do.
Yeah, we're not going to let this go of what they did. No, you know what I mean? Like, their time will come.
All right, guys. We'll see you later. Thanks for tuning in.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Bye.